Morning. Today's Daf Nerchin is Yud Beis. We're starting at the very top of the Amud, a continuation from yesterday's Gemara. Literally, the Gemara, it's a flow. The Gemara yesterday spoke out that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the post-Shemitah year. Shemitah obviously operates on a seven-year cycle. And so we learned yesterday, we had a Brisa yesterday, that it was destroyed in the post-Shemitah year. Why did that Brisa come up in yesterday's Daf? Because yesterday's Daf was dedicated to the topic of Shira. I know that's a funny correlation, but it does connect, and we'll show the connection in just a moment. Yesterday's daf was dedicated to Shira because we had a Mishnah going back to Daf Yud that talked about the range, and we're going through the second parak of Erchin, and the second parak of Erchin, where it's all about ranges from X to Y, and we various halachas. We really are all over the place in terms of which halachas we're covering, but any halacha that has a range in it. So that is going to be covered in the second parak of Erchin. And as such, so on Daf Yud, that's now 2 days ago, so the Gemara goes on to discuss the ranges of shofar blasts that are in the Beis HaMikdash, instruments that were used, the navel, the chalil, various instruments that were used, the musicians playing the instruments, who were the identity of these musicians. So that was all Daf Yud. Yesterday's Daf, an entire Daf dedicated to the idea that there is Shira. In the Beis HaMikdash, Shira, it's the question, one of the fundamental questions that we dealt with yesterday is Yikashir Repe, Yikashir Bekli, is the main component of Shira the vocals, the main component of Shira the instrument, could possibly be a machlokas in terms of where it is. What's the source of Shira? Source of Shira, yesterday's daf gave us nothing less than 10 different sources in terms of what the source of Shira was. When is Shira said? So as we learned yesterday's daf, it's over the Nesachim. But the Nesachim that come in accompaniment with a karban. And yesterday's daf, we ended with the following. And that is, what about Shira over a voluntary karban? Are we going to say Shira over a voluntary karban? Voluntary karban seabor, but still, it's a voluntary karban. It's not a chova. It's not an obligatory karban. So that was a question yesterday. Although the Gemara declared that there is not going to be Shira over something which is voluntary, but rather it's only going to be over that which is an obligation. This is all that we covered yesterday. In part of the discussion yesterday and at the end of yesterday's discussion, so one of the proofs that was brought was a Braisa. Now the Braisa, I'm going to read it from yesterday's daf, although we're going to be seeing it again. So this Braisa comes to us at the end of Masechta Tanis, and it talks about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yossi Omar, it's a little bit ominous that we are reading this Braisa, by the way, in the week in which we're reading Parsha Shlach, although in Eretz Yisrael they're not reading Parsha Shlach, so I don't have to be that myopic. But here in Gullis we're reading Parsha Shlach, and so obviously it deals with the Meraglim, and it's the unfortunate birth of Tisha B'Av. So anyway, so we're talking about Tisha B'Av over here. Tisha B'Av two times over, meaning the first and second Beis HaMikdash were destroyed in Tisha B'Av. And by the way, in the course of today's daf, we're going to be doing a lot of Jewish history. A lot of Jewish history is going to be covered in today's daf, so it'll be, today will be really a crash course in Jewish history. The Braisa reads, I'm reading the Braisa because you're going to see we're going to be reading the Braisa not once, but two more times today. So the Braisa reads, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Megaglan Zchus Liyom Zakev V'chov Liyom Chayev. So don't have to look in yet. I didn't start with today's daf, but this goes back to yesterday. So good things happen on good days and bad things happen on bad days. So Amru Kishachar Beisam Habayisar Birishona. So when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Oso Ayom Tisha B'Av Haya, it was the ninth day of Av. Motzei Shabbos Haya was a Sunday. Motzei Shviat Haisa, it was the first year of the Shemitah cycle. Umishmarto Shal Yehoyariv Haisa. And it was also the Mishmeret of Yehoyariv. The Kohanim were broken up into 24 shifts, Mishmaros, and each one is assigned based on their patriarch. So the shift of Yehoyariv, so that was the operating shift in the Beis HaMikdash. They operate on weekly shifts. So that was the operating shift in the Beis HaMikdash during the destruction of the first and seemingly second temple as well. Well, we'll get to the second temple. We haven't done that yet. Vayu Kohanim Levim Omdim Al Adochnan, and now you had the Kohanim Levim on the platform in the Beis HaMikdash. Vamim Shira, and they would sing Shira. Ma Shira Amr, and what Shira would they say? Vayashav Alehim Esonam V'Asam Yatzmisim. Well, so they said now the 94th parak of Tehillim. V'lo Yispikol Amr Yatzmisim Hashem Elokeinu, and it didn't end with the words Hakadosh Baruch Hu will cut us down. Ashabah Oivim V'Kavshum. Until the enemies came in and they conquered. So in other words, that was the description, a historical description of the destruction of Bais Rishon. V'chei Mishniyah. And then the Braisa ends with two words, very succinct. Everything we just said is also true for the second Beis HaMikdash as well. So all recorded information, how it was the ninth day of Av, it was a Sunday, it was the first day of the Shemitah cycle, it was during the shift of Yahoyariv, they were singing the 94th Perek of Tehillim, so that was all true on Bayis Rishon, that's all true on Bayis Sheni. An alternative way to understand is that some of it, which was true on Bayis Rishon, is also going to be true for Bayis Sheni as well. But not till the end of the daf today are we going to make that proposal. So way ahead of myself in making such a proposal. But anyway, that's what we learned yesterday. And if you remember yesterday's daf, the question that the Gemara asked yesterday is, what are the Levim doing singing a song that is not appropriate? Meaning they are singing the Mizmor Shel Yom Revi. They're singing Wednesday Shira. And they're singing on a Sunday. How does that work? So the Gemara yesterday said that they weren't singing per se because of the Shir Shel Yom, because it wasn't, that was the Wednesday Shir, and they're singing on a Sunday, but rather it was a dirge. In other words, they were singing it as a dirge. A kina. Awesome. Akinos. Okay, and that helps. So they were singing it as a dirge, and it was almost like a prophetic a prophecy that they had vis-a-vis the impending destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Okay. We're going to transition over to our daf today, and we're going to open up with a question. So we're going to start off with halacha today. This is really going to be the only halachic point of the day. The rest of it is all going to be a historical discussion, but you'll see why. The question of the Gemara is, how about just singing Shira over Nesachim by itself? Meaning, when we bring a carbon chavon, an obligatory carbon, so what we're going to be doing is we're going to be singing shir over the carbon. But specifically, when the nesachim are brought over said carbon. Now the Gemara wants to know, would we be singing shir if it were just nesachim by itself? Now, if you think about it, meaning the shir is said over nesachim, we quoted psukim yesterday that indicate that this is so, but that's the nesachim that complement the carbon. Here, what if we bring nesachim by themselves? Now, we already went through menachos, and pretty recently, and we know that Nesachim can be brought independently, right? If a person wants to offer Nesachim by themselves, so he may do so, and would you be singing Shira over it? So, Kevan da Amar Rebbe Shmuel Bar Nachmini Amar Rav Yonos Aminan Shein Omrim Shira El Al Yayin. So, Amrinan. So, on one hand, we'll go back to what we learned in yesterday's daf. You know, the Shira said over Yayin. When I'm offering Nesachim by themselves, that's Yayin. So, fine. O Dilma Alachil V'Shira Aminan Ashiya L'Chud Al Arminan. The other possibility is that no, that I'm going to say shira over the yain, but only when yain is there to complement the carbon. But if the yain's not complementing a carbon, then we're not going to be saying shira over yain. And so that is the question of the Gemara. Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here. And let's repeat the Braisa now for a second time. It's first time today, but it is immediately on the heels of yesterday's Gemara. So Rabbi Yossi Omer Megavgan Chusli Am Zakeh V'chulei. At this point in time, the Gemara already says, then you know the rest of the Braisa. Now, Hai Shira Maya Vidite. So we already went through the entirety of the Braisa. Now the question is, what are we talking about when we say Shira? So Ilema de Olas Chova Mihava B'Shivasa B'Tamas Batala Tamid. So we'll go back to the point that we made yesterday. They are not offering a daily carbon because they didn't have a daily carbon. At the destruction of the first temple, already the Tamid was Batal on the 17th day of Tamuz. That's what we call Shivasa B'Tamas. And the Mishnah Tani says that there were five tragedies that occurred on the 17th day of Tammuz. One of them is Batal HaTamid. We didn't have the Karmen Tamid. So for 3 weeks already, we've been going without any Karmen Chova. Ve'elod Olas Nadava. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's talking about Olas Nadava. Maybe it's talking about a voluntary carbon. So the Gemara says, that's a possibility, but remember what we said yesterday at the end of yesterday's daf. Va'atani, Rav Mari, Bered, Rav Kahana, Delotricha. So we learned at the end of yesterday's daf that you don't sing Shira over voluntary carbonos. So, it was an obligatory carbon because they didn't have any. It wasn't a voluntary carbon because we don't do Shira over voluntary carbon. So, Alalav Dinasachim. So now we're just process of elimination. So we knocked out a chova, we knocked out the nandava. So it must be that Nesachim by themselves. We're suggesting that only because we got nothing else to suggest. So So the Gemara goes back to the point that it said yesterday, but now we're reiterating it because we're just simply showing it doesn't have to be that they offered any carbon. It could just simply be it was a dirge, and that's in fact the case. We already established it's the Shira for the fourth day of the week, meaning it's Wednesday Shira. So Ella Aila Ba'ama Hu. So the Gemara says it was just simply a kina. It was a dirge. They were singing it on Sunday, not in the form of Shir Shal Yom. They were singing it because it was thematic towards the day. It forecasted the impending destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, okay, but they were standing on the platform. Generally speaking, if you're standing on the platform, it usually indicates that this is for Avoda, for some sort of carbon that's being offered. So the Gemara says, okay, that's true, but not in this particular case. Could be Reish Lakish, Dam Reish Lakish, Dam Shira, Omer Shira Shalom Al HaKarban. So if they want to say Shira, even if it's not for a carbon, you may do so. So Yahachi Ben Asachim Nami. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? If you can, if Shira can be said and it doesn't necessarily need to correspond to a carbon, so let me ask you a question, says the Gemara. What's the big deal? Meaning, let's say you're offering Nesachim, and you want to break out in Shira, and you want to break out in song. So, okay, so in other words, we just learned together that singing can also come unaccompanying any kind of carbon. So why not just sing over Nesachim? Like, can we just say that? So the Gemara says, no, we can't just say that. So Lema, Nami Lema, Nafik Mene Chorba. So the Gemara says, because here's what's going to happen. If we get into the habit of doing Shira over the types of carbonates that don't require Shira, like Olas Nedava, like Nesachim, if we start doing that, well, the Levim are going to get into the habit of, you know what, we can sing, but we also don't have to. Because remember, now for Nesachim and for Olas Nedava, there's no obligation. So they're going to get in their mind that, oh, it's okay, it's voluntary. Meaning, we like singing, and it's really nice, but we don't have to. And that mindset then will then go to even when it's an obligatory carbon. But as we learned in yesterday's daf, if it's a carbon chova, so then it's not optional that they may sing, but then it becomes an obligation. So we just don't want the Levim to get into any kind of mindset of, you know what, Shira is optional, and we'd like to, but if it's inconvenient right now, we're not going to. So we never want them to get into that kind of mindset. So therefore, we're going to limit Shira to only the times in which it's obligated to do Shira. Okay. Icon that takes us now to the end of the first section of today's daf. And so the question of, is Shira said over Nesachim by themselves? And it's seemingly the Gemara's answer is no. The only time that Shira is required is only where it is a carbon chovat sibor. It is a communal obligatory carbon. Okay. From this point going forward now, we're going to go cite the Braisa one more time. And we're going to explore and we're going to... And we're going to do a little bit of history. I would like to do the following. Before we actually start with the Gemara inside, so let me just give a quick tour of Jewish history. And specifically now we're going to be talking about the first Beis HaMikdash. And later this morning we're going to be talking about the second Beis HaMikdash. So in terms of the first Beis HaMikdash, so I'm going to go forward in time. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but you're going to see, though, the Gemara is going to really attack it going backwards. Meaning we have a reference point of some 15 years post Chorban Bayis Rishon, and so we have a reference point, and so the Gemara is going to go backwards. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to go forwards, and I'm just going to show you history as we go forward, and you'll see then what's going to happen. We're towards the end of Bayis Rishon, and the first base of Mikdash lasted for 410 years. The 410 years of the first base of Mikdash so ends with it being destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. Okay. Nebuchadnezzar actually did not reign that long before the actual destruction of the base of Mikdash. In fact, the actual destruction of the base of Mikdash occurred in the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. So he's... But the truth of the matter is that the Beis HaMikdash was in his sights almost from day one. As we're going to learn a little bit later on this morning, Nebuchadnezzar takes over the Babylonian Empire. He actually, everything is world domination back in the day. Meaning it was basically like, from the Gemara's perspective, it's like one dominant kingdom. So he took over from Sancheriv Melech Ashur, destroyed Sancheriv Melech Ashur, and so Nebuchadnezzar now takes over. In terms of Babylonian kings, this is not actually relevant to today's daf, but it's actually pretty easy to remember. There are only three Babylonian kings. It's Nebuchadnezzar, followed then by Evil-Merodach, followed then by Belshazzar. If you remember the Gemara in the beginning of Megillah, so for that discussion, you needed to know all three, and you need to know the length of all three. Anyway, Nebuchadnezzar ruled for a total of 45 years, also not relevant to today's daf, but just good information to know. 45 years. So, in year one, it took him a year to conquer Nineveh. Good. And we're going to see that later on. And then already in year two of his reign, so he sets his sights on Eretz Yisrael, specifically Yerushalayim. Remember, at this point in time, there was no northern kingdom. Northern kingdom was already exiled. We're going to learn a little bit later this morning, some of the exiles were actually brought back. But that comes up later on. So all we have basically now is Yehuda. Yehuda coupled with Binyamin. But we only have Shevet Yehuda, right? Hence the Jews. And and Nebuchadnezzar now sets aside. Now, at the time, the king of Yehuda was Jehoiakim. And so, in year two of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, so already he subjugates Jehoiakim. We're going to learn a little bit later this morning. So for 3 years, he subjugates Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim then decides that, you know what? I don't no longer want to be a puppet, so he rebels. And for the next 3 years, he rebels. That's a total of 6 years. And then, in the seventh year of Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar says, enough. And he takes Jehoiakim and he exiles. Now, at that point in time, Jehoiakim is no longer even the king. It was Jehoiakim's son, Jehoiachin, otherwise known as Yechaniah. Yechaniah, Jehoiachin, one and the same person. So now, already in the seventh year, you have Jehoiachin being the king let me go from Nebuchadnezzar's, the beginning of his reign. In the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, so you had Jehoiachin now who took over for the father Jehoiakim, and Jehoiachin was sent into exile. And a lot of Jews at that point were sent into exile. And included in a lot of Jews is the leadership, right? A number of the Nevi'im, Talmidei Chachamim, including Yechezkel. So this is now in year eight of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. There is a major exile that takes place, including the king of the Jewish people and many of the Talmidei Chachamim and Nevi'im as well, including Yechezkel. Okay, and then Nebuchadnezzar inserted another puppet king of the Jewish people, Sidkiyahu, and that lasted for another 11 years. And then Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first base of Mikdash. So basically, 8 years into Nebuchadnezzar's reign, I'm just going to give you the key numbers. 8 years into Nebuchadnezzar's reign, that was the first major exile, where he exiled Jehoiachin and all the Nevi'im, including Yechezkel. Just give me a moment. 19 years into his reign, he destroys the first base of Mikdash. Okay. Where we're going to be starting now in the Gemara is going to be many years later. Mm-hmm. We are going to start in the Gemara now 25 years after Yechezkel was sent into exile. How do I know that? Because the Pasuk's going to say it. Meaning Yechezkel now is going to talk about having a vision 25 years after he was sent into exile. And as we're going to learn in just a moment, he also identifies that year as the Yovel year. So the information that we know for sure is that Yechezkel had a vision 25 years after he was sent into exile, and we also know that that year is a Yovel year. And so what we're going to be doing, what the Gemara is going to be working on, is given that information, we're going to now work backwards, and we're going to see if everything fits. Meaning, what are we shooting for? The Gemara is shooting for that the year of the destruction of the first base of Mikdash is going to be in a post-Shemitah year. Okay? That's, hopefully I laid everything out, so you know exactly where the Gemara is headed. With all this, we're going to be given a couple more numbers. But basically, once you have that outline, the Gemara actually is pretty straightforward. Okay. Let's start. Gufo, Rabbi Yosi, Omer, Megaglin, Zchutzli, Amzaka, V'chulei. Okay, so the Gemara says, you know the Braisa. Okay, so first base of Mikdash was destroyed in the post Shemitah year, year one of the Shemitah cycle. Now, Birushon ben Motzei Shvius mi Mishkach alav Aksiv. The Gemara says, now how can that work? Because, and here we head to the 40th parak of Yechezkel, where he has his vision, and he actually dates himself. So it's on the 25th year since we were sent into exile. B'Rosh Hashanah be'esor l'chodesh, which was Rosh Hashanah on the 10th day of the month. Right? Flag should go off. Right? And Rosh Hashanah, which is on the 10th day of the month. We all think that Rosh Hashanah is on the first day of the month. In fact, I thought that myself. So what does that mean? It's Rosh Hashanah on the 10th day of the month. In the Yovel year, Yom Kippur basically looks just like Rosh Hashanah. And we said this not so long ago. On we blow shofar on the 10th day of the month of the Yovel year. The davening, the tefillah of Yom Kippur of the Yovel year looks just like that of Rosh Hashanah. It's got machios, zichronos, and shofros in it. Okay. So in other words, when you're talking about Rosh Hashanah being on the 10th day of the month, that's basically a flag for, that's code for, it's a Yovel year. And it's now 14 years after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So the Gemara does exactly what I predicted. Not because I predicted it, but because I'm somewhat prepared. So in other words, so fine. So this is a Yovel year. So now we know for sure that 25 years after he was exiled, 14 years after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we know that that's a Yovel year. And so now all we have to do is just simply work backwards. Now, so the Gemara says, now if I go back now and I do and I crunch the numbers, so it's not going to be 14 years, but rather it's going to be 15 years. And so when Yechezkel is describing it to be 14 years after, he seems to be one off. So the Gemara says, "Amar Ravina bar Basrei Shana Acher Shana Shuk Zayir." So the resolution to that is actually pretty straightforward. In other words, don't count the year of actual destruction, meaning go the year after the destruction. So if I go after the year after the destruction, so it comes out to be 14 years. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, okay, but I'm now going to work with the other number that he provided. He says that this is 25 years after he was exiled. It's not 25 years, it's 26 years. The Gemara says, how do I think that? Because Amar Mar Galab Sheva, Galab Shmona, Galab Yudches, Galab Yutes. Now, we have the following Braisa. Exiled in year 7, exiled in year 8, exiled in the year 18, exiled in year 19. Now, if you followed me just a couple minutes earlier in the intro, so you already know that although there are four numbers that are given over here, they really only represent two historic points. Year 7 and 8 is the same year. I know that sounds strange, but in other words, we're going from the year that Nebuchadnezzar took over and the year that he subjugated Yehoiakim. If you go in year 8 of Nebuchadnezzar, which corresponds to the year 7 of Yehoiakim's subjugation, so that is the year in which Yechezkel was sent into exile, together with the Yehoiakim, together with many, many of Jewish leadership, was sent in. So 7 and 8 actually corresponds to the same year. And 18-19, same thing. 18-19 also corresponds to the same year. 18 is from the year that Yehoiakim was subjugated. 19 is from the year that Nebuchadnezzar took over. And that's the year in which the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So the Gemara at first is not going to see it that way. The Gemara right now is going to be operating with the thought that it's not two points on the calendar. But what I'm saying right now is going to be clarified from the Gemara. But anyway. But the Gemara right now thinks, Mishev Atam Neisrei Chad Srei. So the Gemara says, well, look, if I go from 7 to 18, so that is that's 11 years. And V'chamesh Srei, and then I take the 15 years, remember, 15 years since the temple was destroyed. So Esrim V'shitzavya, so that now is 26 years. And Yechezkel says that it's 25 years after he was sent into exile, so the numbers don't work. So Amalecha Ravina Uledida Minicha, so the Ravina says, look, I'm not bothered by your question. Now, remember, of the numbers that are given, the number 19 is also given. So, Mishev Atashrei, Tartasrei. So, now, if I go from the year 7 to year 19, that's 12 years. V'arbasrei, and now add to that 14 years, 14 plus 12. So, Asim V'shitzavian, that's also 26 years. So, Elamaisach Lemeimar, Levard Mishasa Degaluba. So, the Gemara says, I'm not talking about the year that he was exiled. Meaning the year that he was exiled, don't count that year. Right. Right. Don't count that year. So labar mishasa degalaba lididi nami labar mishasa degalaba. So I'm going to say the same thing. So the Gemara says mikom lakom tishrei chasrei laravina kasha. So the Gemara says okay, but still we identified year 19, and the discrepancy now is going to be a total of 12 years. So misar v'shalosh galiyos havu galu b'sheva l'kivish yoyakim shishmona l'nevuchanetzar. So the Gemara now goes and clarifies these numbers of 7, 8. The numbers of 7, 8, the numbers of 18, 19 are not identifying different years. 7 and 8 are identifying the same year. It's just a different reference point. 8 is from when Nebuchadnezzar takes over. 7 is when Jehoiakim is subjugated. And then 18, 19, same thing. It's not from, it's the same year from two different reference points. 19 is from when Nebuchadnezzar takes over. 18 is from when Jehoiakim is subjugated. Okay, fine. And now everything works out. Meaning, if now you go, let's go forward. Okay? These charts are really helpful. Let's go forward. Meaning from the year that Nebuchadnezzar takes over, so now if I go 8 years into his reign, which happens to be 7 years after Jehoiakim was subjugated, so that's the year that Yechezkel was sent into exile. We are not counting that year. When Yechezkel now says it's 25 years later, he means 25 years after the years were exiled. And he identifies that as a Yovel year. If that year is a Yovel year, and I work backwards, what comes out now is that the actual exile occurs in the 25th year of the Yovel year. So far, so good. Now, I mean, by the way, none of this is good. Meaning the only thing that's good right now is just that the numbers work. Right? But we're describing the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So I'm only saying good to just simply the coordination of the numbers. Okay? I'm sure everyone understood that. Okay, then he also gave a description. This is now Yechezkel saying that it's 14 years post-Chorban Bayis Rishon. It's 14 years post-Chorban Bayis Rishon. And again, according to Ravina, we are not counting the actual year of destruction. That also works. Because now that means that it's 14 years back. The 14th year that which he's describing is the Yovel year, because he said so. And so now I work 14 years backwards. So that means that that is 14 years. It's 50 minus 14. Again, count the year 50. So that means that that is now we're landing in year 37. The year prior to that was the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. That was year 36 of the Yovel cycle, which is the year after the Shemitah year. So now it works. The numbers all work out. So what Yechezkel is describing is precise and coordinates with the Brisa that we've seen that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in a post-Shemitah year. Okay.
Could it be that complete years? I mean, like one complete year after the destruction. 14 complete years after the destruction. Not that not continued the beginning of the destruction, but complete years.
Yeah, but the Gemara prefers this approach. This approach really works out. And the Gemara is now returning to the top of Yud Beis Amud Beis. In year number one, Nebuchadnezzar conquers Nineveh. And then Shnia, Allah, Kivish Yoyakim. And in year two, now he conquers Yoyakim. So basically, now we have a 1 year discrepancy between Nebuchadnezzar taking over the world domination, and when he subjugates Yoyakim, only 1 year later. But that now gives us that 1 year discrepancy. So when you see the number 7 and 8, it's just simply the same year, but from two different reference points. And when you see the numbers 18, 19, it's the same year from two different reference points. Good. That now all settles the first base of Mikdash, and it allows us now to complement, on one hand, Yechezkel's description of he is now 14 years post-Chorban, 25 years post-exile, and it coordinates with everything we just saw in the Braisa, that the first base of Mikdash was destroyed in the first year of the Shemitah cycle. Okay, now with that in mind, now we're going to go to Bayis Sheni. Because remember, the Braisa also says, Megalgalin Schus L'Yom Zakai V'Chiv L'Yom Chova. So that, and the Braisa ended off by saying that everything we said regarding the first Beis HaMikdash, true by the second Beis HaMikdash as well. Second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in Tisha B'Av. That's clear. But what we're also saying is that not only was it destroyed on Tisha B'Av, but it also was a Sunday. It was also the year after the Shemitah year, meaning the first year of the Shemitah cycle. Okay. And also it was the Mishmeret of Yehoyariv and everything. Right? Ditto. Everything that's said regarding the first Beis HaMikdash is true by the second Beis HaMikdash as well. And for now, for the Amud Beis of today's daf, we're going to basically ask the question. Is that historically correct? Is that historically accurate? V'chein b'shnia. Shnia b'motzei shvias mi'mishkach l'amichti. Ba'i sheni kamakam. The second base of Mikdash lasted for how long? Arba me'av esrim. So it lasted for 420 years. Okay, historical note. You've heard me say this before. But it's okay. I'll say it. Hopefully I'll get to say it many more times. The second base of Mikdash, we have a tradition that the second base of Mikdash lasted for 420 years. And this is what's called our Masorah. We have Jewish historical accounts. I say Jewish historical accounts. I mean, Chachmei Yisrael have on record Jewish history basically up to and including up to Bais Sheni. The most referred to document is Seder Olam. Seder Olam, which is authored by Rav Yosef ben Chalafta. So he gives a historical account. When the Gemara says that the second base of Mikdash lasted for 420 years, it's based on Seder Olam.
Second one
is 420 years. Secular historians has the second base of Mikdash going for 586 years. And so that is, it's a significant discrepancy between our version and our tradition and the secular tradition. They have the Persian Empire lasting a lot longer than we have. We have the Persian Empire in our history being a much shorter period of time. And so, okay, and that is part of what the discrepancy is, and much more to discuss about that, but not here, not now, right? That was just like a little side note. Okay, we're going to be working with the number 420. That's the number that is the assumed number for the rest of today's daf. Good. Second base of Mikdash lasted for 420 years, so the Gemara says, no, now let's do the math together. So, Michti, Bai Sheni, Kama, Havaka, Arba Mea, Vesrim, Arba Mea, Tamya Yovle. Now, we're of course assuming Yovle is a 50-year cycle because it is a 50-year cycle. It's true. So that means to say that we're going to take 420. Now, we're assuming, by the way, that the year one of the Second Temple, we're resuming the Yovle count. Meaning the Gemara's assumption right now is that for the second base of Mikdash, for the 70 years that we were in exile, between Bais Rishon and Bais Sheni, there was no counting whatsoever. Which makes sense, meaning we weren't in Eretz Yisrael. So now when we come back, we start now year one. So 400 years going...
It was in a continuation of the previous
That's
year.
What the Gemara is assuming. Yes. So the Gemara now is saying that for 420 years, so if I work with intervals of 50, so it's actually very simple. So 400 years now is going to be 8 intervals. Good.
Is it a requirement that majority of Jews have to live?
I will come back to that point. That's a good question. I'll come back to that point. So the Arba Mea Vitamya Yovle, so that now comes out to 8 Yovels. 8 Yovels for 400 years. Now, that leaves us now 20 years. 20 years, so it's really simple to do the math. It's one Shemitah cycle, 7 years. A second Shemitah cycle, 7 years. And then that third Shemitah cycle is going to be 6 years. And now the problem, of course, is that based on what we just did together, comes out now that the second base of Mikdash is being destroyed in the 6th year of the Shemitah cycle, and that doesn't coordinate with what we learned. We learned it has to be the first year of the Shemitah cycle. So, Arba Trei Shavua Pashalu Shes Havalu B'Shisa B'Shavua. And the Gemara now asks exactly this question. It's the 6th year of the Shemitah cycle. So, how does that work? Meaning it doesn't complement what we learned in the Brice of Seder Olam, that the second base of Mikdash 2 was destroyed in the first year of the Shemitah cycle. And for the remainder of this daf, we're going to try and to some degree succeed in getting it to that the second base of Mikdash is destroyed in the first year of the Shemitah cycle. Here's now what the Gemara is going to do. And this is going to be a little bit of accounting over here. What we're going to do now is we're going to change our one of our assumptions. I said that Yovel is a 50-year cycle. I'm not budging from that, meaning it is a 50-year cycle. However, when I string Yovels together, does it come out to be intervals of 50 or does it come out to be intervals of 49? How can a 50-year cycle be intervals of 49? That's a neat trick, but it can work. Because according to the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda, it's a machlokas, but according to the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda, Yovel is two things. One, it's a Yovel year. Two, it's also the first year of the next cycle. So according to Rebbe Yehuda, so your Yovel cycles are not intervals of 50, they're really intervals of 49. They're 50 years, but year 50 also counts as year one of the next cycle. So that means now that according to Rebbe Yehuda, if I start in year one of the second temple with a Yovel cycle, So that means now it's not going to go to year 50. It's going to be eight intervals are going to be eight intervals of 49. So what I've really now done is I've just found, if you're following me, I just found 8 years in the 400 years. Because it's now at a clip of 49-year cycles, not 50-year cycles. So the Gemara now says, if you do this way, then actually it's going to work out. So the Gemara makes exactly this point. Hamani Rabbi Yehuda Yidam, Rishnas Chamishim, Olakan, Olakan. So Rabbi Yehuda's position is that the Yovel year is both the Yovel year and year one of the next cycle. Aisa Tamiya Mitamiya Yovle. So for our eight Yovel cycles now, we have now a surplus of 8 years. Vahani Shis. Now remember, we were working with year six of the Shemitah cycle, but now we can add eight more years to that. So Have Arbase. So 6 + 8 is going to be 14. Ishtachech the Mamotei Shvi'is Charuv. So now that was the entire duration of the second Beis HaMikdash. And now that means that we are now, the last year of the Beis HaMikdash is the last year of the Shemitah cycle. And the assumption is that the temple was destroyed the following year, which means it's going to be the year after the Shemitah cycle. Okay. So using Rabbi Yehuda's math and calculations, so it works out. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, you have to be consistent. If we're using Rabbi Yehuda's calculations for the first Beis HaMikdash, sorry. Let me say that again better. If I'm using Rabbi Yehuda's calculations for the second Beis HaMikdash, that means that I have to be using his calculations also for the first Beis HaMikdash as well. And he, Rabbi Yehuda, Brishon, Allah, Mishkach, Allah, Detanya. Now the Gemara says it's not going to work for the first Beis HaMikdash. How do I know that? Because now we're going to go back to our first Beis HaMikdash. And Shiva, so Yovels, Mani, Yisrael, Mishnech, Nusul, Aretz. 17 Yovels were counted from the time that we entered into Eretz Yisrael, the Achiyasu, until they left. 17 Yovels. Now, it's actually not so hard to figure out. Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash after how many years of being in Israel? Or let me put it this way. After how many years after having left Egypt? So the Pasuk says very clearly, right, in the beginning of Sefer Malachim, 480 years, which in of itself is amazing. Meaning we left Mitzrayim. We spent only 40 years in the desert. I mean, only. we spent 40 years in the desert. I'm now, you know, since we're looking so big picture, so like, what's 40 years? Okay. It's been the majority of my life, but okay. Anyway, So 40 years in the desert. We didn't build the base of Mikdash until 480 years after we left Egypt. It's an unbelievably long time. The first base of Mikdash lasted for 410 years. So it's actually now it's simple math. 410 plus 480. So that's 850 years. 850 years. So there were a total of. I'm sorry. 410, 480. I'm sorry. I skipped a step in my mind. Thank you. It's 490, but take away the 40 years of being in the Midbar. Okay, fine. So anyway, It's 890. Thank you. Okay. Not enough coffee this morning. Sorry. 890, but take away 40 years of being in the desert, so it's 850. So it's 850 from when we go into Eretz Yisrael. So, 850 now, how many Yovel cycles is it? So, 17 Yovel cycles. Okay, at least there I got that one right. Okay, good. So, that's 17 Yovel cycles. So, V'yeta yocholomar misha shenichnasu manu sheimata omer kei nimtza beis charuv b'tchilas Yovel. Now, the Gemara says, now, here's what you can't say. You can't say that we started counting Yovel from year one when we entered into Eretz Yisrael.
14 years.
And why can't we say that? I'll tell you why we can't say that. Because if we were to say that, then it would come out that when is the Beis HaMikdash going to be destroyed? In the Yovel year. Now, in of itself, by the way, that wouldn't be the end of the world because the Yovel year is the year after the Shemitah cycle. But remember, we started this morning with the Pasuk in Yechezkel. Yechezkel says that he's standing in the Yovel year and it's now 14 years after the destruction of the temple. Oh. So we have to take that pasuk into account. We can't ignore that pasuk. So what we're going to say is the following, and it actually works out very well. We started counting the Yovel cycle when? Not in year one when we enter into Eretz Yisrael, but remember, when we go into Eretz Yisrael, it's 14 years of conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael. So that means that only after conquering and dividing, then and only then do we start counting the Yovel year. Now, if I go 17 Yovel cycles later, now the numbers work out perfectly. Yecheskel now is describing how he is 14 years in a Yovel year, 14 years after the Churban Bais Rishon. Oh, okay. So now, okay. So Ben's following, and so now what the problem is that all this only works with intervals of 50, meaning the Chachamim. Now, if we're going to try to fit in Rabbi Yehuda into all this, it gets messy. And so, if I go with the Chachamim, everything I just said works out, the math works, the history works, everything works out. But if we're going to be operating with Rabbi Yehuda's intervals of 49, it's a mess. It doesn't work. So, and the Gemara makes exactly that point.
But the Chachamim don't work with the region of...
Okay, fine. Okay, good. The Chachamim work out perfectly with Yecheskel. I'll go over it again with you after, but it works out perfectly. So, So the Gemara just basically says, okay, now, it's everything we just said, but the Gemara just spelled it out. That Yecheskel's Pasuk, where he is now in a Yovel year, 14 years after Churban Bais Rishon, so that works out, assuming that we started counting Shemitahs and Yovels only, not in year 1 when we enter into Eretz Yisrael, but only in year 15. Meaning 14 years of 7 years of Kivush, 7 years of Chalukah, and then only in year 15 do we start counting, and Yecheskel describing how he is 14 years post-Churban, that works out perfect. And that's a Yovel year, works out perfectly. And also we're going to add the point that we said earlier, meaning, and don't count the actual year of destruction. So it's really 15 years after. But anyway, good. Now the Gemara asks the question: V'e Rabbi Yehuda Aisa Shivsei Mishavsei Yovle Shtiyahane Le B'Tasa B'Shavua. So the Gemara says: so now, but if let's say we assume like Rabbi Yehuda, now for Rabbi Yehuda it's not intervals of 50; it's intervals of 49, and there's 17 of them. So that means now that we're gonna have now 17 years. Now 17 years. How does that work now? So I have. At the end of 17 Yovels, and the end of 17 Rabbi Yehuda Yovels, so that means now that I'm going to have an additional 17 years. In Shemitah, in intervals of Shemitah terminology, what does that come out to? 7, plus another 7, plus another 3. And now the Gemara points out, so if we work like Rabbi Yehuda, so it comes out now that the Shemitah cycle is going to be, I'm sorry, the destruction of the first temple is going to be in year 3 of the Shemitah cycle, and that doesn't coordinate with what we said previously. That has to be in year 1. So the Gemara says like this. We're going to now suggest the following. It is, of course, much easier to say that the numbers that we're working with is working with Chachamim's Yovel, intervals of 50. It's much easier to say that. Everything works out. But you know what, however? We will attempt to put Rabbi Yehuda's numbers in, and we're going to say the following. We're going to say that sometime during the first base of Mikdash, they stopped counting Yovel and they hit the reset button. Oh. Now, how does that work? Meaning the assumption of the Gemara is that Yovel only operates when you have representation of every one of the Shvatim in Eretz Yisrael. Now, we know at some point during Bais Rishon, Sancheriv comes in and exiles the 10 northern tribes. What you may not know, although the Gemara is going to tell us this in just a moment, is that Yirmiyahu makes an attempt to go ahead and bring them back. And in fact, not only makes an attempt, but the Gemara describes how he had some success in doing so.
So he brings the majority of the Jews back.
Now, it's not clear, this part's not clear. It's not clear how successful he was, but the Gemara's assumption is the following, that Yirmiyahu does in fact bring them back, again, to the degree of success, I can't speak to that. But what the Gemara is assuming is that he does bring them back. And once he brings them back, so then they started counting Yovel anew. So basically, we can suggest that we're working with the Rabbi Yehuda numbers of not intervals of 50, intervals of 49. And we could still have it come out that the first base of Mikdash is destroyed on year 1 of the Shemitah cycle. Now, if you did the numbers from the beginning to the end, like we just did, it comes out that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed in the third year. But what we're going to suggest now is that at one point, once Sancheriv exiled the northern tribes, we stopped counting altogether. And then, at a point historically, when Yirmiyahu brings them back in again, we start counting anew. If we can determine when we started counting anew, which we're about to do right now, So then we're going to figure that the Bayis Rishon was destroyed in year one of the Shemitah cycle. So the Gemara says, okay. So basically, now we get to knock out all the years prior to Sancheriv's exile. Sancheriv's exile of the Northern Kingdom. I'm sorry. Now, at this point in time, the Gemara does not fill in any of the gaps. Meaning the Gemara does not say how the numbers work. So if you take a look at Rashi over here, and I'm not going to go through the Rashi inside, but if you take a look at Rashi over here, basically, Rashi goes through the history of which you have Yirmiyahu bringing back the exile, and we start, and the last 14 years of Yoshiyahu, King Yoshiyahu, the last 14 years of his kingdom, we started counting anew, plus another 11 years of Yehoyakim, Yehoyachin, plus another year, 11 years of Sidkiyahu. So that is going to be 14, 11, 11. So that comes out to 36. So that comes out to a total of 36 years. 36 years. If I do that now in Shemitah cycles, 35 gets me to the beginning, to the end of a Shemitah cycle, and 36 gets me to the beginning of a new year. The beginning of the next Shemitah cycle. And so, with this would be a way of presenting how you can learn the first temple being intervals of 49 like Rav Yehuda, and at the same time also having the first base of Mikdash being destroyed in the first year. Admittedly, not an easy approach, but an approach of the Gemara.
The Chachamim don't believe that there was a reset button.
Yeah, and according to the Chachamim, there was, right, we just simply, there doesn't have to be a reset button. Right, correct,
why
correct.
Why there should be and why there shouldn't be.
Right, right.
Why?
Well, there should be a reset button is because once the Northern Kingdom has been exiled, so we don't have the 12 tribes living in Eretz Yisrael. And Yovel's predicated on the 12 tribes living in Eretz Yisrael. That's actually coming up later in this Masechta. And why would the Chachamim argue on that point? I don't have a prepared answer for that. Okay, so...
By the way, was Yisrael alive when the second Beit HaMikdash was built?
I don't know. V'chein Kitani. The Ibai Sema. The Gemara says, you know what, as long as we're here, what we could do is the following. Meaning, we spent a good amount of time this morning trying to coordinate the first base of Mikdash and the second base of Mikdash. We went with two different intervals of Yovel, Chachamim versus Rabbi Yehuda. It was a lot of work today in trying to get everything to work out. The Gemara now is going to go with a different approach and an easier approach, and I alluded to it at the beginning of Shir today, but now we're going to say it. And that is, not everything has to coordinate. Meaning, even though the Braisa says, and the same thing, and ditto for the second base of Mikdash, we don't mean ditto for everything. We just simply mean Tisha B'Av. Maybe even Sunday. But after that, we don't need... The Braisa didn't mean that there was full coordination. Everything that happened the first base of Mikdash in terms of its destruction, same thing with the second base of Mikdash. The Braisa didn't mean that. The Braisa just simply meant they both were destroying Tisha B'Av. And maybe even one... You can put in Sunday as well. So la'olam rabbanu chikitani v'chem b'shnei ashara. So hachinam imestar. But the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what, it makes sense. Meaning this approach is actually simpler and more reasonable. Why? Because look, remember what we said? The first base of Mikdash was destroyed during the shift of Yehoyariv. Now, Yehoyariv is one of the 24 Kohanim Mishmaros. We also know, as we're about to point out in just a moment, that Yehoyariv and his entire shift did not come back in to the second base of Mikdash. And how do I know that? Vatani, the Gemara has now a Braisa that records this as part of our Mesorah. Arba Mishmar Salum and Agola, only four of the 24 Kohen families came back for the second base of Mikdash. Yedaya, Vecharim, Pashchor, Ve'emar. And so they are named. Obviously, Yehoyariv not being one of them. Amdu Nevi'im Shebinem Vechalkum Lechavdal Mishmaros. Now, we still wanted to work with shifts of 24. So we did it. We took each of the four that came back. We subdivided each four into six. Six times four is 24. So Bilam Menasim Bekapi by Yedaya Vechalka Vechel Chaveiro. Yedaya came and now he picked first. Or the lottery that was taken, so he goes first. So Vechaveiro Sheish. Bacharim Vechalka Vechel Chaveiro Sheish. Harim, who was the second of the four that came back, he was second, and he had, and now his subdivided families were also going to come together with him. V'chein Pashchor, v'chein Emar. So in other words, of the four that came back, so each, they took a lottery to decide which the order, and each family was divided into six sub-families, and that's how you got to the new 24. Point all being, Yo-Yarib did not come back for the second base of Mikdash. Point being, that when the Brisa says, and the same thing for the second base of Mikdash, we don't mean everything. Can't be everything. Yo-Yarib didn't come back in the second base of Mikdash. So that detail certainly did not replicate in the second base of Mikdash. So we can easily say that that detail didn't replicate, and it didn't have to be that the second base of Mikdash was destroyed in the first year of the Shemitah cycle, meaning we don't need every detail to be replicated. So, I'll just finish reading the section of the Gemara, as we are now on the top of Yud Gimel and Aleph. So the Nevi'im then made the following institution, even if Yoyarev ever decides to come back, Yedaya is now first in line in terms of the Mishmaros. Ela Yedaya Ikar v'Yoyarev Tafel. Lo. So Ela Ashara. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're basically going to make the point that even though the Brisa sends V'chein B'Shnia, it doesn't mean every detail. It just simply means the first and second base of Mikdash were destroyed in Tisha B'Av. First and base of Mikdash were destroyed on Sunday. After that, it doesn't have to be that every other detail is going to be complementary one to another. And once we say that, so then the entire exercise that we went through this morning is just simply not necessary. Meaning we don't have to now try to work so hard to get the numbers to coordinate so that the year of destruction of the second base of Mikdash is coming out on the first year of the Shemitah cycle. Okay. So we could say all that, and then a lot of the Gemara then would have been unnecessary. But that's just that only works with our second approach. Okay, let's quickly recap. Okay, the first question on the Gemara today was whether or not we say Shira if Nesachim are brought by themselves. And the Gemara seems to suggest that no. In other words, Nesachim, the only time that you say Shira with the Nesachim, but only when Nesachim are coming as part of a accompaniment, an accessory to a carbon, and specifically a carbon chovas sibur. Okay. And then what we did for the rest of the day is we went through the Brisa, where the Brisa says that the first and second base of Mikdash were destroyed on Tisha B'Av, on Sunday, on the first year of the Shemitah cycle, when Yehoyariv was operating the shift of Kohanim in the base of Mikdash. And what we did from that point going forward is that Brisa is supportable. Supportable based on the Pesukim that we know in Yecheskel, where he clearly identifies which year was the Yovel year. It was Yovel year was 15 years after, he said 14, but not counting the year of destruction. 15 years after the destruction of the first base of Mikdash. So can the Brisa work with the numbers that are given to us by Yecheskel? By the numbers that we have as part of the Mesorah, in terms of when Yehoyachin was sent into exile, when Sidkiyahu finally takes over, but the base of Mikdash is destroyed. The Brisa of 7, 8, 18, 19. Can it work with that Brisa? And so many different points on the historical map that we have to coordinate with. Plus, if that's not enough, plus also trying to coordinate it with the various opinions of the interval of Yovel. There are only two opinions in terms of the intervals of Yovel. But one opinion is that it is a 50-year interval. Another opinion is that it's a 49-year interval. And so does it work with using those two different intervals? And so the Gemara today was a bit complicated trying to coordinate and put all these numbers together. For the most part, it works. It kind of fell apart trying to stick in Rabbi Huda's numbers into the first base of Mikdash. The Gemara suggested, well, according to Rabbi Huda, there was a reset button during the first base of Mikdash because once the Chayiv exiled the northern kingdom, so then they stopped counting Yovel, and they started only again towards the end of the first base of Mikdash. That's the only way that we got Rabbi Huda's numbers to work in the first base of Mikdash, but basically it got a little bit complicated. Okay.